The Force.net presents...
It's the amazing Technicolor Cheese Wedge!
Digital Emma Radio.
This calls for immediate discussion!
Increase the Flash Gordon noise and put more science stuff around.
The opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the opinions of the Force.net.
Good idea, Eldor. Of course it's a good idea!
And now, here are your panelists. This animal.
Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes,
Steve Bayland.
The boy is dangerous. They don't sense it. Why can't you?
Dave Buzzerka.
I know what to be trifled with. That is all you ever need know.
And Justin Ridlock.
He's not the bizarre. He's a very naughty boy.
Yes. I got it.
Can you hear me now?
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Digital Llama Radio. You know, it feels like only 10 minutes ago that we were recording this exact same thing, but through the magic of failed technology and Chris Hanel's ability, we are recording again.
It wasn't failed technology. It was what's known as an on switch.
That is failed technology.
So, ladies and gentlemen, here we are again for the second installment of the 12-point B show of
it's
Digital
Llama Radio. Times pi, I don't know.
Something episode like 12A versus 6 through 8 seats A and B.
Exactly, yes. And so for the first time in several months, you are going to hear live in Wisconsin, Chris Hanel.
That doesn't sound too impressive.
I love Wisconsin!
Who abandoned us to go to Florida, is now back with us for a few days, and he's going to be recording.
Messing up our show already!
Screwing the show once already!
You know, it's like 78 in Orlando right now. I could be there instead of taking this crap.
And you could be screwing up their radio shows, too.
You could be kissing your Latin lover.
So, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead with introductions. To my immediate right is our dear friend and technical screw-up, Chris Hanel.
Hey! Hi, everybody. I'm going to kill Steve in 25 minutes, but hi. For now, I shall be happy.
And then slightly more to my right is my beautiful and lovely wife, Rebecca.
Oh, good brownie points there. Hi, guys.
And then, of course, there's me, Abe Paterka. And then to my left is our good friend, Steve.
Louis Peter Stephen Palin. Hello!
Genesius. We forgot the Genesius part, man.
Today, we have with us a dear friend, a very brilliant man, a phenomenal human
Nobel Prize winning.
Ingenious.
Ingenious.
And damn good looking.
Yes, we have... with
the,
us.
The guy that I call boss.
The man that you call boss. Let's get his official title, owner, almighty lord, and...
Grand Moff.
Grand Moff. Yes. Do they have your official title here, or no?
Rick McCallum. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man behind the Force.net, Josh Griffin.
Hey, guys, how are you? Good to see you. I do have this incredible sense of deja vu right now.
I can't imagine why.
It's almost like I was just doing this, and now we're doing it over again. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's just unusual. I just thought I'd bring that up.
You told him to say that, didn't you? I was out looking for headphones, and you're going, hey, this will be really funny.
Here's the
plan. Chris is trying to find the on switch, and we're like, let's make fun of him on the redo. All right.
Like they have to plan that.
No, it's an honor to be here with you guys. Seriously, Digital Llama is famous. I mean, the world over. I was in Yugoslavia last week, and they were just all about Chechnya. They loved it.
They were like, oh, Mr. Gibson, Digital Llama Radio.
Exactly.
Even Al-Qaeda loves us.
Al-Qaeda was like, we're going to put down our guns if you just give us that show. It was special.
Digital Llama, world peace for all.
Bringing peace to the world, one country at a time.
No, seriously, I've always enjoyed Digital Llama. It's been a lot of fun. Glad you guys have found your home here on TFN. And since we're here at FilmCon hanging out together, I thought, why not make a little appearance on the show as long as we get the equipment working this time and we'll have a good time.
You enjoyed it so much, you're doing it a second time.
For the first time, all over again.
Be sure to join us for the late show. No kiddies under 18.
All right, so let's go ahead and jump to what our first topic of the day was, which was the
epitaph.
The episode 2 deleted scenes. Now, for those of you that have any telepathic ability, the last time we recorded this, we had a phenomenal discussion. But as we said, Chris screwed the technology.
And so we've gotten it. Move on. Yeah, let the boy be.
So, episode 2. Well, first of all, what did we think? We'll turn that over to Josh.
You know, I really enjoyed the episode 2 DVD. I'm a very optimistic person, and so I definitely like Star Wars in any fashion. The episode 2 DVD, technically very, very sound, but the deleted scenes, I have to admit, they left me wanting something more. I enjoyed them. My wife, in particular, loved them because they explained the love story. She's into their whole relationship thing, and so am I. I love you, honey. But the idea here is that I'm expecting...
And you are absolutely right, honey. Absolutely right.
I'm wrong. I take it all back. I'm sorry.
All right. Glad we got that out of the way. So, no, I'm just wanting the Clone Wars. I'm wanting two lightsabers. I'm wanting force throws. I'm wanting fire. I want stuff blowing up. I want more missiles. I want new vehicles. I want... More of those stinking awesome gunships.
Well,
what is the
deal?
Well,
Christmas is around the corner. Just go sit in that old man's lap who's wearing a red velvet suit. Maybe he'll get it for you.
What do you want from Lord Lucas this Christmas?
What are you talking about? That is George Lucas.
Yeah, I know.
More deleted scenes and the ones I wanted. I mean, they have this whole subplot in the episode that was filmed where these two Jedi go off away from the Genosian Coliseum and they go into the droid control ships, blow stuff up. I mean, it's a wicked cool sequence. And it's been filmed, but we it's not on the DVD. Yeah,
were the effects done on it?
What's that?
Were the effects completely done on it?
The effects could have been finished very quickly. They did these in 2 months for the episode 2 DVD, so it's not like it was going to be the end of the world to make that happen. But they chose other stuff, which is fine. Again, my wife really thought they were great.
Well,
I was bored.
I understand there was stuff that were in the deleted scenes that were done, that were in the cut, but they did the visual effects, but then cut it out later. And then there was some stuff that... was never done, but they went and threw it in for the DVD. Which one?
Yeah, priorities, people.
The droid analysis scene is where Obi-Wan comes into the Jedi Temple and takes his little dart thing to the droids and says, "Who is this from and who is it made by?" They have no clue, so they go take it to the Dex's diner and he's able to figure it all out. That was in the cut of the movie, the first time they've actually really deleted a scene and that was finished for the film. But in all the other cases, they were not going to be used. They were shot, but
yeah,
it was not going to happen. They threw the stuff in, said, "Let's just throw some effects on." And throw it on the disc, make people happy. But I think they missed a real opportunity. Yeah. They left out the best stuff. They made more stuff for the Clone Wars that they cut out. Why not have it on there? That's what fans.
And that was all finished.
I think really want all finished. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to agree with Josh on this. I mean, I love the love story stuff because I thought that was very cool. It moved the story along. Not according to George, but you know, it did give us more character. Driven material, but I wanted my lightsaber fight, you know.
Exactly.
Everybody knows my opinion on this. I thought the lightsaber fight between Dooku and Obi-Wan and the lightsaber fight between Anakin and Dooku was pathetic.
Yeah,
it
honestly,
was
episode one was better.
Episode
it was much
one was stronger.
Oh yeah, the Obi-Wan Darth Maul fight is my favorite lightsaber duel of all time.
And so we had these pathetic fights, and you know, I know everybody says Christopher Lee is old, but you know what? They CGI'd him for most of the time.
Yeah.
So why couldn't we, you know, just
yeah, you
get
have
the
him
stunt
doing,
double in he, there and put his face on him?
Exactly. Well,
which is what they did for most of them anyway.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is what they did. So what?
So they have him doing front flips, but they can't have him doing
yeah
cool
more
fighting.
Fights.
Swing
so
sword,
where was my more? Where was my cool lightsaber fight? And two, the you know, as we spoke of before, the last. We did this. The there are tons of photographs and still shots in the books, in the card games, in the role playing book that show Dooku fighting with two lightsabers. Where was that cool scene?
Exactly. They definitely have finished the effects for these two because these pictures have been around a long time. So there's all kinds of stuff we know is finished, and yet they're curiously absent on the DVD. That makes
Could
no
it
sense
maybe
whatsoever.
Maybe have something to do with the fact that we're getting onto the final and third episode, and then all of a sudden, boom, you've got episode one
through six
on DVD.
All on DVD, all with extra
with like
and new
45
special stuff.
Hours of
right.
extra special
the,
effects.
It,
and
it continue, the rumors continue to persist of this Ultimate Edition that's going to be coming out 2005, 2006.
The latest I heard is that Indiana Jones actually shows up in episode one.
Really?
Yeah.
Does his father? No, that's it for episode three.
Yeah, they're on that Nazi motorcycle
you know,
with a little sidecar.
Oh, I've got it. That's the secret. It wasn't midichlorians. It was Sean Connery.
Yes. I'm your father. I got motorbikes.
Yeah, of the Force.
I keep hearing stuff about Howard the Duck in Return of the Jedi. I don't know what that's all about, but I just tell you what I
hey,
hear.
He was so. In episode two.
Yeah. So, well, while we're on this subject of additional special effects stuff, let's move on to our second debate, which is something I wanted to bring up because you had said, I can't remember if you said it right now, but I know you said
in the
it
Star
in the
Wars
previous.
Fandom panel.
In the fandom panel and in the previous discussion, you made a great comment about, for you, Star Wars is about the visual effects. The story is secondary and It's about the visual effects.
The spectacle.
The spectacle.
The spectacle versus
and
the
I,
substance.
And I certainly think that in the new versions, in 1 and 2 and 3, that is what George is going for. And I wanted to get everybody's opinion on this. You know, how do we feel? You know, what do you guys think about that? I know my opinion, like we said before, is that I don't care.
Right.
You know, I'm glad that he can, you know, stick an actor in a blue room and build an entire world around him. That's fabulous. But do I need to see it in every single scene?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that Lucasfilm has done. They've made a conscious effort to put a special effect, some special effect somewhere in practically every shot. Celebration 1, this is kind of an old school thing, but Rick McCallum said in almost every single scene in Episode 1, except for one, or maybe two, it's all there's going to be an effect in every... So they're talking about 2,200 effect shots in one film. Now, that's unheard of, but that's the road that Lucasfilm was traveling on. You remember that scene in Episode 1 with Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon? They're in the conference room, and then the poisonous gas comes in, where there's a quick shot of the vent. There's no special effects in that shot.
Yeah.
But that's one of a very few shots. Yeah, you heard about another one, too.
The Jar Jar one, the one where Jar Jar drops the screwdriver or whatever it is into the vent of the pod. And you see Ahmed Best it's his arm in the suit, reach in to go grab it. That's like one of the only other ones I can think of.
Exactly.
That's a totally free of special effect shot.
So Lucasfilm has made a conscious effort to choose to go the path of a visual story. You can tell a story visually. You can tell a story without a script. And unfortunately, I think some of the fans have a misconception that they're expecting a character-driven story. No, that's what we saw in the classic trilogy. That's not going to happen here. They maybe are expecting...
Well, why not?
I'm not saying that they shouldn't expect that, but they're not going to get it. And they haven't up until right now. We're on the edge of the pre-production for Episode 3, and everything we hear is that this amazing visual texture of 1 and 2 is going to combine with a powerful story of 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
So it's all riding on Episode 3. And so far, the early word is really, really, really good.
Well, I hope that's true, because I was thinking about this earlier, and when we got our Episode 2 DVD, we invited a girlfriend of mine over to the house who, heavens forbid...
Becca's got a girlfriend.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Had never seen any of the Star Wars movies. And it came to my realization that I don't think anybody is going to watch 1 and 2 and become a Star Wars fan.
Right.
I think you have to watch 4, 5, and 6 and fall in love with those to become a Star Wars fan. I just don't see 1 and 2 as being the kind of movies that are going to create a new generation of fans.
Well, I mean, look at 3- and 4-year-olds running around with Darth Maul shirts and backpacks.
I think they love it.
And they are the target audience, actually. Because Lucas said he made these are fantasies. These are for kids. It's a huge, beautiful, incredible world full of action. I mean, that's mostly what it's for.
I guess time will tell on that.
Yeah. I think I can find a balance between what Becca's saying and we are. I think that she is right in a sense that they won't be the same kind of fans.
Oh, no, definitely not the same
that fans. We, the older generation, are. Because when you watch...
The older, wiser.
Well, no. Not wiser.
When I was young.
Not wiser,
when
but
I watched Star Wars, we liked...
Not
C-3PO was actually standing there, and we liked it fine. He wasn't fiberglass. He was made of metal.
We watched it on a VHS with little glitches in it, and some kid going moo where it was badly dubbed.
But sometimes during read and feed, we'd watch the 16mm version of it, and we liked it.
We liked it fine.
Pops and all. But before the special edition,
I guess it's just a different type of thing because. The first classic trilogy is character-driven, so the fans that you had were fans because they loved the characters. Mm-hmm. They weren't fans because they were so enamored with the Star Wars universe per se.
Right. Oh, didn't
they
you want an X-Wing,
because
though?
I wanted to be a Jedi.
Yeah. But
I was so jazzed by that concept, that character concept of, I wanted to be a Jedi Knight... Or I wanted to be an X-Wing pilot. Or I wanted to be Han Solo.
I want to wear cinnamon buns on my
head. Yeah. That's why I became a fan. Now, I think the fans that are there are not so much I want to be so-and-so, but it's more of the I would just be jazzed to live in that world.
Some people, though, I think have given up on George Lucas. They're already writing off Episode 3 just by saying, I hope it's good, or we don't even know if it's going to be good. They're already...
That would be me.
Yeah. Like, everyone and their mother, it's like the hip thing to do now, to, like, knock Episode 3, even though it's...
I'm only going on a pattern. I'm just saying that 4, 5, and 6 did not have the complete control of George Lucas and were phenomenal, and 1 and 2 were completely controlled by him and were not what I call, I'm not going to say everybody because Lord knows you're all about episode 2, but I'm saying that episode 1 and 2 for me were not the brand of Star Wars I was looking for. Yeah. And with Lucas writing and directing episode 3, I am sure that I will continue to find it mediocre on the current pattern.
I think that actually he's got it right in the fact that he's got this beautiful universe he's got going on right now. The things he's able to do special effects wise, he just needs to make different decisions with his actors.
Yeah. As in thing, having them act.
Well, it's all about choice. I think probably the most damning choice I found in episode 2 was Christensen when he played Anakin. From the beginning, he was a punk. Mm-hmm. From the beginning. And I'm like, no. I don't think he should have been a punk. I think we should have liked him from the beginning of that movie. And then, all of a sudden, his climax is when he kills everyone after the whole thing with his mother. That's the climax.
It's a good point,
there needs to be more of an arc of corruption within him.
And, you see, but it all happens before episode 2 even starts. He's already mapping off.
This is the choice that he's made, though. And you're saying it's probably a bad one, but George Lucas is picking up a two-hour or two-day session of Anakin's life right in the middle of his transformation into Darth Vader. So you're saying we're picking it up too late in the process. We should be seeing him when he's half innocent still and not so jaded and already.
Yes, we need to see how this young apprentice with an unbelievable amount of
power
gets driven over the edge by a girl.
Yeah.
And you know why we need to see that we like him? Because in the end, everybody wants to like Vader.
That's
everybody
it.
Does, because we know he's a good guy.
At
the
end of this movie, I'm like...
We know he's a good guy, and we want to see him as that good guy. We want
We've
that
never
good
seen
guy
him as that good
before
guy.
Before we then revel in the fact that he is the bad Mama Jama, you know, because we love that, too.
At the end of this movie, I was looking at the love, the charisma between the chemistry between him and Amidala, and I'm like, you know what? I really don't care about you guys. You're all wrong for each other. I look at you in the future. What I get from you now is that you're going to be the old bickering couple at the table that just yell at each other.
Well, let me give you one example of an instance, though, because I think people that can get caught up in the little points of it, and I agree, and even some of the sweeping points, you're thinking you're just disillusioned by what you see, and your expectations are different. Let me give you an example of one scene in episode 2 that will blow you away every single time. Anakin and Padme, Obi-Wan, they're all in the Republic gunship, and they're heading out to chase down Dooku, or whatever his name is, and they hit the sand dune, Padme flies off the ship, they start yelling at each other. That scene, there's explosions ripping the background, the music is powerful, the gunship is screaming, they are yelling at each other at full bore, in front of blue screens where there's nothing to reference. That thing is powerful.
Yeah. I will give you that, yes.
That, every time, and I watch it on IMAX, and I am just getting shivers, because that scene shows me the greatness of Lucas. Now, I understand it was 25 seconds of that film, but that thing was amazing.
I guess my overall feel is the fact that he's got the universe now. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. Now hone the subtlety of the performances. Yeah. Do not in any way, shape, or form decide to classify the performances as good enough. Okay. Try to make them better. Experiment with them. Mm-hmm. Experiment with what else you can do with the character.
I have one final note before we move on to no subject. Return of the Jedi, Luke keeps saying over and over, there is still good in him. There is still good in him. We've never seen that in him.
No,
we got right into the beginning. He's a whiny bitch.
Well,
you know, it's how can we find that redemption in him when we can never enjoy him as an adult? We saw him as a little kid. That's fine. But him as an adult, he was never, ever the good guy.
No.
He was always saying, he's holding me back.
I say that he was never the good guy.
From the very beginning when he walks in.
There were points when he's a teenager. Okay, I gotta go on this. I would have liked to have seen more stuff that we liked about him, but there are parts in the movie that do exist as it does now where he's good.
Yeah.
Like, for example, when, you know, Obi-Wan's plummeting at high speed down in the middle of nowhere and Anakin catches him in the convertible. He's like, what took you so long? Oh, you know, Master, had to find the right kind, the one with the top I like, you know, thing. There are moments where Anakin is cute. There are moments
he's
where he's
smart-ass.
Funny. But that's still funny. There are lots of anti-heroes out there, but there are tons of anti-heroes out there that...
He's the bad guy that we like. We love to like.
Because he's not supposed to be a noble hero. He's supposed to be the anti-hero that we love.
I don't know.
I mean, I think that's really what the Anakin character is that noble, that not noble, but that anti-hero, that he's a good kid at heart, but he lets the emotions get the best of him, he turns evil, and then he becomes a good guy at the end.
Think of it this way. He's evil from the beginning. Fine. And he finally finds good at the end of Return of the Jedi. There's still good in you that he's suppressed since he was born. And he's always been evil. He was destined to bring balance to the Force or whatever. He is going to be evil.
I meant by he was going to kill off everybody else, so there are only two left. And then there was balance, right? Balance. Good guy, bad guy. That was it.
So maybe it's not that he's supposed to be this innocent good guy. He's supposed to be evil from the start. He's evil, evil, evil for 6 episodes. At the end of the Return of Jedi, he breaks down and finally says, my life of evil... It was
wrong. For all we know, this is all going to come full circle in 3. Maybe something happens in 3 that changes him, but then right at that change, boom, he's back to the
dark. I would almost like that. If he was good and a happy and a nice guy, like he's reformed, and then all of a sudden, one event that we can't even admit, boom, he's shafted so hard that he just goes plain wicked evil.
And that, you know what that would be? That would be something between Palpatine doing something to Padme.
Yeah.
That's what it would be right there.
Palpatine just killing her, dumping her in the lava, something right there. That'd be great.
Yeah. So that'd just be, you know, jolly.
Our last point about episode 2 that we made in the previous recording before we move on to the next one is the concept we were talking about, spectacle versus substance. And my comment was, I love the beautiful events and the huge things, but I'm getting tired of it. I don't want to see every scene, like in the deleted scene, the Mace Windu and Obi-Wan walking, and it's all these massively huge wide shots where there's 100 different things going on in the background. We could have filmed that scene in a hallway.
Yeah.
And we would have cared about that scene a lot more because all we had to focus on was them. George is so excited about getting to be able to show 8 billion things happening at the same time in a background. It's too much. It's too busy. I want him to find the balance.
It is almost like he's lost some of the intimacy of Star Wars.
You know, there's a good moment.
I want them. I want the huge Senate rooms and all that stuff.
But only
when they're
merited.
Yeah. I want to get a break.
There's a scene in A New Hope, you know, where they're like, where have you been? Ran into some old friends, you know, and it's just them standing in a hallway and they're talking. It's just this chemistry between them. I haven't had one of those moments. The only moment I can think of is in episode 2 when he's hanging there like, we came to come save me. He's like, good job.
Yeah, that's one of the classic.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the only thing I can find that's equal to that. And A New Hope had the classic trilogy had so many of those moments. Empire Strikes Back was renowned for it. The writing was so good.
Here's a perfect example. Would the scene, again, it's a character thing, but if you take away the character aspect, would the scene between Luke and Leia, or not Luke and Leia, I'm sorry.
Anakin.
The scene between, in Empire Strikes Back, between Han and Leia, where the two of them kiss,
for the first time, in that
tiny little cramped, tight, shot, would that scene have had anywhere near the power Lucas had stuck it in this huge friggin' wide shot where we saw the entire reactor core Millennium Falcon, and there's Han and Leia in one tiny little corner, and Millennium Falcon reactor!
No, it shouldn't be claustrophobic.
And you would have lost everything about that scene. I wouldn't have cared.
Part
and
of
that's
happened,
the problem.
Though, in the classic trilogy, the Death Star makes it confined. They're in the Death Star, they're running around, they're in spaceships a lot. They are confined. All the time. Episode 1, and George Lucas has said himself, he likes the freedom of being able to do whatever he wants, shoot wherever he wants. And I think part of what we're saying, though, is that it's just trying to be so epic that it loses the intimacy that you'd find.
Well, the classic trilogy was epic without having to be epic, you know? It's not something you can manufacture.
Does that mean you have to?
I'll give it to you, but I tell you what,
I love it.
I am all about the visuals. I totally see this. I think you made a really good point last time we recorded this about the horror movie. The horror timed correctly is very, very powerful. But if it's boom, 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 boom,
horror, always, and you never let your audience down.
You're not affected by it, right? And so here we're saying, give us some intimacy, give us those moments with the characters, put them in unusual situations, cramped situations, and then throw
the
epic
thing.
So throw the Clone Wars at us with the missiles and the bullets and the stuff flying around like nobody's business.
Steve, your thoughts.
Steve,
lightsabers are cool.
I miss Yoda as a rubber puppet.
Except for the fact
that makes me evil.
I agree.
Thing, but the one thing I did feel was that, I mean, Yoda was the only one I cared about.
And now
Yoda was
real.
The only... No, no. He's like, in episode two, he was the only one I cared about, that I had my heart invested in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd already written off pretty much everyone else.
I like the clone troopers, too. They're cool.
There was talk... Did you know there was talk back in 1980 about giving nominating Frank Oz for Best Supporting Actor?
I think it's a great idea. I actually talked to Frank Oz and Rob Coleman about 2 weeks ago and suggested the same thing to them and said, hey, guys, why don't you make this happen? Although, you know, this is interesting. I don't think we've posted this yet on TFN.
Ooh, exclusive! Exclusive!
There is a strong possibility that...
Frank Oz will become part of the Force Dynamics.
No, it sounds good, though. This is the fourth. There's a strong possibility that Ewan is going to be up for an Academy Award this year.
Really?
There's some different stuff talking around going for what he's done. But
which one?
I don't want to really say too much more than that. Episode two is being considered for some different Academy Awards.
Well, that's for visual effects, but for acting, I couldn't see him getting an award for episode two.
I certainly wouldn't give him one.
It's not because of him. It's the material he was given to work with.
Off of each other in a way, and all the characters kind of clashed everywhere they went.
But you know what, though? People say Natalie Portman is a phenomenal actress.
She is.
She very much is.
I'm glad you think so.
Not with this material.
I have not seen her do anything worthwhile in a Star Wars movie.
Not a Star Wars movie, but...
Samuel Jackson is an incredible actor.
Oh,
I've not seen... But you know what? Are they incredible? Are they... Yes, I've seen other films of theirs.
Brilliant.
Are they good if they cannot act properly under George Lucas' direction?
Now, here's the thing.
Wouldn't a good actor be able
not
to act...
No, no.
Here's the
no.
thing. Here's
That's
the thing.
That.
A perfect example, because this is my field of study. Actors can be phenomenal and still not be able to work with certain material. For example, there are many actors who are amazing actors, brilliant actors, cannot do Shakespeare to save their lives.
Right.
Okay? Does that make them a poor actor?
No.
No, not in any way. That it means just means that there is certain material...
Their palette is not as extended.
Not as good at. So what with Lucas... Now, let's just all admit, Lucas's writing is not very good. It's not.
I'm suggesting, though, it might be poor casting. Just because if these actors with this direction and this material can't deliver... Perhaps it's the casting issues, not the actors. We keep harping on the actors, and I understand.
Well, how many different ways can you work? Be mindful of your thoughts, young Padawan.
How can you say master in one scene?
Yeah, I mean, how many... I'm sorry, master. How many different times can you say that and work it into the character in such a way that's effective?
We're more comfortable with it. For example, let's look at Liam Neeson.
Right.
I don't think you will ever find anybody...
God, he was incredible,
who
wasn't
said, who would look at Liam Neeson's performance in episode one and go, nah, he sucked.
Right. No, he was good. He was good.
Liam,
he's been trained in blue screen, though.
He's a classic,
right? Exactly.
Actor.
Exactly.
So, was Samuel L. Jackson the best choice? Probably not.
But he's going to be awesome in episode three.
Would Anthony Hopkins have been able to handle Lucas's style?
And
would have made a badass Mojo.
That's another one. Okay, that's a hope list now. We've got
George,
three.
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins for three. We need him.
You can't see this, but Steve's rolling into a little ball. His arms flailing in the air.
Oh, and Christopher Walken! Christopher Walken!
Jeremy Irons!
Al Pacino.
But you notice that...
Did you hear that one? That Josh Griffin from TheForce.net endorses us being cast.
That's right.
Pidge Valama, episode three.
Yes.
So I think you're right.
I think I should replace Anakin.
And me. It's all I've...
I think you're right. I think there could have been better casting.
With actors
more trained, because Lucas writes in a very classically trained, classic literature style. It reminds me a lot of Shakespeare in that idea.
This is exactly what I'm saying.
I think you're right.
I'm saying, yes, there are issues with the writing. Yes, there's issue with the material that's being delivered. But I think you've got to consider the choice of actors and actresses. Is Natalie Portman good looking? Yes. Is she fine for the role? Yes.
Will she marry me? Hopefully.
Can she deliver a single line in the canon cut of episode two worth hearing? No.
In the IMAX cut, yeah.
In the IMAX cut, she's brilliant.
That's time for another show.
In the deleted scene, she was great.
Actually, a little honest there, yeah.
The factor that we also haven't figured out in is the editing. Sometimes in the editing room in post...
An editing can save a performance.
An editing can save or break a performance. For example, the whole idea of basically...
Picking which take was...
Which take will work.
Right.
Sometimes
true.
The director will go for the technically more brilliant shot. If the shot looked better, even if the performance wasn't quite up to par with this other scene where the camera jiggles just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, but we can't have that.
But see, Lucas should be able to take the best of both worlds. The best.
The super take.
Exactly. He brags on being able to do that, and yet... people will argue that it's not happening. But although you've got to admit, episode two is a step in the right direction.
Yes.
Come on. Give me that at least.
It was definitely
way better.
Yes. I guess. Yeah.
And you know what?
I kind of feel bad from the sense that you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And I'm getting that whole feeling
from here.
You
know who reminds me of? Kevin Costner. No, Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner has done some amazing films and has done some crap.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Kevin runs through the same thing that George does right now, is that episode three, oh, it's going to suck. It's blah, blah, blah. Any new Kevin Costner film, oh, it's going to suck. Blah, blah, blah.
It might be good. Yeah.
And it might be good. So I guess in a way, yeah, we should give him the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, episode three, let's wait.
You know what? We've talked about episode two for like the last three episodes now.
I suppose, and we should mention
FilmCon.
Yeah, let's mention.
We're having an excellent time here. They showed the formula, that gets some points.
Bonus points.
Yeah, and
people seem to like the formula and the outtakes. So,
and guest of honor, as Josh is showing off on his badge.
Thank you. That's me.
We got llamas on ours. Cusco from The Emperor's New Groove is printed on our badges, so we can walk around and go, "Hey, look, we're special."
Well, kudos for Cusco.
Josh, did you need to get going?
We need to send Josh on his way.
I must bid you farewell.
Send him. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
We should, however, do a plug for FilmCon. I mean, talk about what FilmCon is actually
FilmCon,
about.
FilmCon's actually here for charity. All proceeds go to the Breast Cancer Recovery Foundation. Go to FilmCon.com for more information if you're interested in making a donation of some kind, even if you couldn't be here.
If you couldn't be here this year, be here next year.
Yes, next year is going to be a blast.
FilmCon was a lot of fun. I actually have anticipated this film this convention because it's a little smaller, to perhaps not have the impact that some other conventions have been to have had. But you know what? It's kind of neat. Have that more intimate feel with the people that are here. And I'll tell you what, it's neat to have more of a technical side of things, behind the scenes. How do they do that?
Yeah.
They've had some episode 2 animatics that have been seen nowhere else. They are here this weekend. And
we got to touch the holocron!
That's right. I mean, there's stuff at these smaller conventions, especially this is a charity convention. Give it up for FilmCon, Eric Larson. It's really good stuff. Honestly, support this kind of stuff because, yes, the big ones are fun. 30,000 people at the celebration.
Topless women!
Can we edit that out? I hope.
Well, you didn't acknowledge it, so we'll just keep it.
There you go. Good.
You're safe from your life.
No, seriously, it's been a great time here. I appreciate the guys at DLR, and I've had a good time. I've got to go do a lecture on TFN downstairs. So
I'm going to help.
And hopefully Chris will be up here doing the show until it's done. So I'm kidding. Take care, DLR. Love you guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. A lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
And actually, I think we are going to wrap it up right there.
Okay. Well,
so,
talk more about FilmCon next time.
Yes, so...
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, on behalf of Josh Griffin, myself, Abe, Becca, Steve,
bye.
Justin in absentia as freaking usual.
And the lady who cleaned the hotel room so that we would have a place to record.
God love her.
This has been Digital Llama Radio!
Good night, good llamas, good show.
Don't touch me there!
Abe, it's over. The moment's passed, man.
Use the force.
Abe!
Get a tranquilizer.
Use the force.
Kill
him!